Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast, where we discuss empowerment, growth, and inclusion for individuals with autism. And now your host, Dr. Carol Baltazar.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. B. Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast. First, I want to quickly remind everybody that my podcast is intended for educational purposes only and is not medical advice. Please talk to your doctor if you have questions. The views and opinions expressed by me and my guests are our own personal opinions. My guest today is Dr. Josette Thompson. Dr. Thompson is a family medicine physician and is teaching faculty for Kaiser Permanente Family Residency Program. She currently precepts in the behavioral medicine part of the curriculum. Dr. Thompson is also an ASD mom, and her first child was diagnosed with moderate to severe autism at age 3 years and 7 months. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Josette Thompson. Hi, Josette.
Well, hi, Carol.
Thanks for joining me today on the podcast.
It's a great pleasure. I always enjoy talking about Bruno's story and any of my stories.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, I was an only child. We moved a lot when I was a kid. My dad had a PhD in agronomy. The field was very unstable. I lived in a lot of different places growing up. We settled in Ohio, where I went to college at Baldwin Wallace, and I ended up going to medical school at University of Cincinnati. Did a year of OB-GYN in North Carolina. Ended up going into family, which was really more me than a surgical specialty. Although I loved doing deliveries and continued to do them for a while. After being a family physician. And I met and married my husband, and I fell in love with him, which is a fun story that I won't tell here. But he wanted to move to California. And I said, oh, sure, honey, I can go. And he was like, can you get a job? And I said, sure. And I had gotten a letter from Kaiser. And Kaiser was my moonlighting job in Ohio. They used to have Kaiser in Ohio. So I had a very good impression because it was way better working at Kaiser than it was at a university hospital residency. So they were starting a new residency program, and I could be faculty on the ground floor, like designing the program. So I immediately went for it. I had done a teaching fellowship too in family medicine at UNC Chapel Hill. I didn't mention that. So I was pretty excited about getting involved in that. And I was admin faculty for many years.
Nice. Well, what brought you to decide to have Bruno evaluated for autism?
So Bruno was born in 1996, and I had his little sister Vivian 23 months later in 1998. I was aiming for 2 years apart, and I'm kind of an overachiever. So I had them, and no, seriously, that's me. I'm like, oh, I got to make sure they're 2 years apart, but I overachieved. So I always knew there were some things about him. I knew he was incredibly smart. I mean, he was a colicky baby, difficult. He used to scream at night for an hour every single night, and my husband would walk him. My husband was the most patient person in the world. He would walk him. So he was kind of a difficult baby. We thought he was quirky. Lots of moms of ASD kids think their kid is quirky. Mm-hmm. Not sure what exactly it is. But when it was time for him to go to preschool, I knew he couldn't go. He was old enough, but he wasn't toilet trained. He couldn't follow instructions well enough. He didn't have enough language. Mm-hmm. I had had a speech eval already. They were giving him like a tiny little bit of speech therapy. So I had this nanny that was college educated, and I took my baby to another older lady that watched her during the day. And I actually sent the nanny to the preschool basically as an aide. And I found a preschool that would let us part as teachers and let my nanny be there every day with Bruno. And that actually worked out well for me later because it turned out to be excellent proof that he could be mainstreamed with an aide.
Okay.
So by doing that, by investing that money, because that was expensive, sending my nanny to school with one kid and paying another nanny for the other kid. Oh, I spent a fortune. But it actually got me a lot of services. Like it returned very, very well in terms of services. So when he was at preschool, the teacher is the one who noticed. My mom was an elementary ed teacher. She made a comment and I got angry with her because most ASD moms get angry with the first person that suggests that their kid has autism. I got really mad at my mom. How could you say such a terrible thing about my child? Mm-hmm. But when the preschool teacher made a comment, I had to pay attention. She actually had a grand nephew with autism. She knew, and she noticed that he couldn't even make marks on a paper with a crayon. because of the sensory issues, he couldn't tell how hard to press.
Right.
All the other kids could draw. He couldn't draw. And she must have spotted other things. But she got me to ask. I ended up asking the PhD psychologist about it. He said what I've heard him say so many times after that. It won't hurt to get an evaluation. So I did.
Okay. You were very fortunate then to have, like, you know, multiple eyes on him, you know, like objective, looking at him objectively also, rather than, you know, because it's hard as a parent, you know, you think, oh, and even some teachers, when my son was younger, they'd say, oh, well, mm-hmm. you know, he's a boy. And so boys mature later. But you were able to have Bruno evaluated early on. Like, was it 3 years old?
He was 3 years, 7 months when I got the eval through the school district. Mike Ritz, who was the PhD at our program, told me how to do it, who to contact, what to ask for. And I went to watch the evaluation. I scheduled it so I could be there. And while I was watching it, I immediately realized he had autism that I had never realized before, because I saw he was brilliant on some of the things. He was off the scale smart. And I knew my kid was brilliant for various reasons, but there were things that he could not do at the level of a 12 to 18 month old baby. And when I saw the scatter, I realized this is not developmental delay. There is nothing this can be except autism.
Oh, okay. You said he was going to preschool. And then how long did it take to get an IEP then when he started school?
So the preschool was private because it was a co-op. I had chosen a co-op because no preschool would probably let you send your nanny as your kid's aide without some kind of, you know, auspices of something. And I just kind of arranged that informally because I kind of knew by, you know, being a parent, participating in the meetings and teaching and stuff, that they would probably welcome a college educated English speaking adult to be an extra body there. Mm-hmm. So that's what my nanny at the time did. And we didn't get the IEP until after we had the first, the school district did all the evaluation testing, but they don't give the diagnosis. You have to go to somebody. You have to go to either a developmental team. Mm-hmm. I actually went to a pediatric neurologist because I knew she would give the diagnosis and then I could get started with treatment. Got the diagnosis from her, got the regional center. You know, I started getting everything lined up. And during that lining up of resources, we got our first IEP. And there were a number of IEPs. There were several IEPs that were just stressful meetings that nothing was accomplished. But eventually we did start getting stuff out of the IEPs.
Right. That's great. And you said he was already doing speech language before that as well.
Well, you know, I worked for Kaiser. So I had Kaiser and they had given him a very small amount of speech therapy, some ridiculously small amount. And the school district, once he had the autism diagnosis, said, oh, yes, he could have a half hour of speech therapy a week. And we all know that's not enough. But the part that I didn't tell you was that through networking, I met a woman named Claire Bothwell. Remember the preschool teacher whose great nephew had autism? Well, Claire Bothwell's husband, Bruce Bothwell, was the lawyer for this kid when he went to the school district to get services. So Claire raised a couple kids with autism herself, and her oldest, Fisk, was my role model. That's what I wanted my kid to come out like. And she actually met with me. She sat down with me. And she gave me like a list of instructions. Do this, say this, do this. They're going to do this. Go to the Masons. You can get free speech therapy. It's wonderful. That's the one you want. Get on the waiting list. Call every week so they move you up. She told me everything I had to do to get what I need, basically.
Right.
And it was because of what she did for me. I always say it's because of Claire that I've helped every single other person I've ever helped, because Claire was the only person that helped me.
That's amazing to have a support system like that. That's great.
If my kid had leukemia, they'd be telling me I could stay at the Ronald McDonald House. You know, I would have resources, but they tell you, oh, your kid has autism, and they don't do anything for you.
Right.
So Claire is the one that set me up.
That's great. I actually have a Claire in my life too. And it just so happened, her name's Marilyn, but is the same thing. I mean, she helped me navigate things when my son was much younger, but it does help to network, to speak to other people, because that's how you learn.
Yeah. And I can't emphasize enough that you have to network not only with other moms all over the place, but if possible with local moms, because local moms know about local services, who's good, who's bad. And
exactly.
You need to know all that information.
Exactly. Now, what about ABA? Well, actually, let's backtrack a little bit, because when Bruno was diagnosed, you say he had moderate to severe autism. And so for our listeners who, you know, are just new to the autism journey, what is moderate to severe autism look like?
You know, it was in the DSM criteria at the time. And he also had a child psychiatrist who I got from, it's a long story, but her husband was a psychiatrist in our program. And he said she walks on water and she cures autism. And I said, okay, sign me up. Mm-hmm. So we got her too. And she diagnosed him with that. And I remember looking at the DSM criteria, and we were several DSMs ago at that time. And right. there no longer is Asperger's syndrome, which he didn't have because he had speech delay. So it's a child with speech delay. So therefore it's definitely not Asperger's. And it's someone whose autistic behaviors are moderate to severe on the spectrum. In other words, they're not mild, because it is a spectrum. And by autistic behaviors, I mean spinning. Bruno was twirling. He was flapping. He was in his own world. They have what we call channel 13. If we're all on channel 7 and channel 7 is boring, our kids have channel 13. They're not even in our world. Mm-hmm. And all these different autistic features, that the sensory issues, you couldn't cut his hair. He'd be running around the shop screaming. You couldn't toilet train him. He couldn't ask for anything, use any kind of language. If he wanted a cookie, the best he could do was take my hand and move it toward the cookie jar. He didn't really have, and because of that, he tells me now that he really has no memory until he's probably 7 or 8, which is when he started to have more normal language, because he didn't have the language to have that kind of memory.
Wow. Now, did you utilize ABA therapy?
Immediately, as quickly as we could get it. We aggressively tried to find out who were the good ABA providers. And this was back in the day when you could run your own program, and it was called a co-op program, where you hired the therapist, the school district paid them, and you basically supervised them. But there was an ABA company that sent a behavioralist who was master's degreed, who kind of ran the team. But none of that is available today. Nobody will do that. But mm-hmm. we did that.
Wow.
So we were basically running a home. My husband used to say we were running a home business, and the product was Bruno.
Oh my gosh. And you're working full time as well?
I was 80% of full time, and I had to, and this had some consequences later, a lot of consequences that were really bad. I had to beg my husband to quit his job. He was a PhD physical chemist. He was working for a company making building materials. He wasn't that happy anyway. I told myself I was doing him a favor. But mm-hmm. my job, I had twice the income, and I had way better benefits, and my benefits would help pay for some of Bruno's needs. So I felt like he needed to be the at-home parent, and that is very hard for a man to do. And I completely overlooked that part, because I would have destroyed anything in my path to get help from
child.
I made my husband stay home, basically. Remember, we had no family in the area. My husband was Korean. His family was Korean. They considered autism to be extremely shameful. His dad was a neurosurgeon. This just wasn't going to fly. They completely ignored it. They referred to it as Bruno's problem once in a while. My parents were far away. They were mad at me for marrying someone of a different race. You know, all this stuff was going on. So it was just us against the world.
That's a lot. I mean, I can understand, because I'm Filipino, that there is a stigma in the Asian culture about, you know, autism and other, you know, developmental disorders. It's just not really talked about.
Apparently. So we had it all on our own, and even our in real life friends, they all kind of came around when they heard about the diagnosis. And it was like the way you come around when someone dies, and then they kind of disappeared. Mm-hmm. So you can really be alone with this.
Right. Well, you have each other and then your kids too. How many kids do you have?
Yeah. Well, that's a little bit more of the story. You know, a lot of people's husband doesn't help at all. My husband did everything. He was amazing.
Wow.
The first day I came home from the eval and told him he has autism, he stayed up all night researching on the internet. And in the morning, he handed me a stack of paper that he had printed and he went to bed. I mean, he was great. He was like a spy spying on the bad ABA program, peering through the windows, finding out, you know, reconnaissance information to make sure. I mean, he was terrific, but, and he fought like a tiger in the IEPs. I didn't realize he had it in him. But because he was such a nice, gentle person, but in the end, you know, he struggled with his major depression and ultimately died. And so we had one other child together. He vetoed a third child. I wanted to have a third at 40. I would have been 40 having a child every 2 years, you know. So I had Bruno at 36, Vivian at 38. I wanted to have a third child at 40. And looking back, I realized that I was trying to replace Bruno. And the thought in my head was like, oh, oops, I had a defective one. Well, I'll have another one and it'll be normal. You know, and that's what I was thinking. And my husband was like, no, absolutely not. We can't do a third child, you know. So, and I respected that. So after my husband died, not going to lie, one of the things that attracted me to my significant other that I've had this whole time since pretty much was the fact that he had twins that were almost my kid's age exactly. And it made up more of a family. Like I had already socialized Vivian knowing that I would die someday and that, you know, Bruno would need support. I socialized Vivian from a very early age. We take care of Bruno. Look out for Bruno. He needs our help. He needs our support.
Right. Right.
And I picked up a couple, of additional kids to do that as well, or with the goal of doing that. So then they were, then there were four.
Right. Right. But I took that approach also, or I have taken that approach with my younger kids. So I have three kids, and I always tell my kids that they have to just look out for each other, you know, always look out for each other. So.
Yeah, no, that's ideal because it Bruno will probably always need just a little bit of support, some kind of support, no matter how brilliant and functional he is, because I worry about him in different for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. What are some challenges and hurdles that you and Bruno have experienced and how did you overcome them?
So school was never a problem because Bruno was a genius. There was really nothing that he struggled with in school other than reading comprehension, which was a huge issue. Decode, he spelled words like school when he was two, but he had no idea what you use language for. He just knew it was a really cool code and he had figured it out. So he would go around reciting poems as a toddler that he could read out of a book, but he had no idea what all the words meant. I think it was just a cool pattern for him. Pattern recognition, they really excel at.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to agree.
It extracurricularly, there was nothing happening for him. He didn't really get him. He likes the ecology, so he got involved in ecology club. There were a few fits and starts trying to get involved in an investment kit club, and he got involved with another kid that was kind of a jerk. And you know, he never really did much extracurricularly. And years later, he said to me, he told me how he realized when he was applying for college that all the other kids had extracurricular activities and he didn't really. He had played an instrument. We started him in piano when he was small. Again, I always had an ulterior motive. The goal of piano was to develop his brain in a different way, to develop the music part of his brain. So, and he did piano all those years and it helped him. He studied cello for a while in junior high and that was super lucky because that's how he met his friend that he finally made. Everyone who's got a kid with autism and you feel like it will never, ever happen. And you just dream that maybe it will. And that's how he found his friend was sitting next to him in orchestra.
Oh my gosh.
It was life changing because he had never had a friend.
Yeah. I can relate to that. I think I just mentioned something recently in our group about finding friends, like some of, you know, the kids, on the autism spectrum, sometimes they do have socialization like skill like problems with socialization skills. And because, you know, like you said, they might be on channel 13 and the rest of us are on channel 7. So it's just kind of, for my son, it was just, even though he's like the nicest kid, but for him, especially when I think when he was younger, he was the kid who would follow the rules. Everything was like had to be in a certain order. And, you know, and when you're, I think when he was younger, and I'm going to be truthful, I mean, he was like the kid who other kids would be like, he's a tattletale, he's a goody two shoes. So it was really hard for him, I think, to have like close friends.
Kids have to be mature enough to realize that that goodness that means that he's going to tattle also means that he's going to be fiercely loyal, and they have to be old enough to appreciate all the facets of that, because right. that's so ASD. That's Bruno. I remember one of Bruno's ABA therapists going, Bruno, if you were a policeman and I was speeding, would you give me a ticket? And she thought it was hysterical. Bruno says, of course I would give you a ticket, meaning if you were speeding. She
right.
thought that was hysterical. Bruno was like, of course I would.
Right, right.
You know, and that was a funny Bruno story, but that's just how, you know, how he is.
Mm-hmm,
but he's fiercely loyal. He's a very loyal friend.
Wow. Yeah. And he's lucky that he found a friend in orchestra. I think that's great.
It was very random. The kid had just moved to the area, so didn't know Bruno. And the kid was from a family of eight and had grown up kind of on the wrong side of the tracks, you know, and had moved to this high school where people had coach bags, you know.
It's a more moneyed area. And he sat down next to Bruno, really not knowing anybody, and just must have struck up a conversation. And they both liked the same video game. And we nurtured that friendship like a tropical plant. I mean, my nanny that I had at the time, she did everything to promote that friendship. I bought ticket packages to the Dodgers because this kid, you know, with his family, he wasn't going to get that kind of stuff. So we would have box seats at the Dodgers. They would go to games. They, you know, we had him participate. He was in a family of eight. They had like three bedrooms. He would come to our house and have some space and some peace and be away from the toddlers. And, you know, so it was a great experience for him. And I'm sure that's part of what kept him coming back. There was a lot in it for him.
Right. And it's interesting, you know,
but he also taught Bruno about having a friend.
Exactly. Exactly. And I like what you said about like the extracurricular activities and having kind of like an ulterior motive. Cause I also like in terms of activities for my son, you know, he wasn't really into sports. I mean, he wasn't like the most, I'm going to be honest, you know, he's not like he wasn't very coordinated when he was smaller.
A lot of kids with autism have low tone. I mean, there's issues.
Mm-hmm. But when
you know the cerebellum and the corpus callosum, there's some issues there.
Right. And so when he was in high school, he wanted to get involved in drama club and like karate club. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is good because we can work on like gross motor and fine motor stuff.
Right.
And you know, like he joined the stage crew for drama club and like he learned how to, you know, paint and use power tools and you know, use a hammer and stuff. And I mean, those are skills that, I mean, I don't necessarily, I haven't taught him, but yeah, I mean, getting kids involved in other ways that you may think, you know, that you might not think of, right? Like other than like sports, they, you know, like you said, with playing the cello or playing the piano.
Well, with stage crew, especially, you know, that can attract a lot of kind of people with nerdy intelligence and people who are into electronics and sound effects and different things. And it also gets them into theater. And, you know, a lot of kids with ASD can be really good at theater because they can memorize things really well.
Yeah.
And their experience of performance anxiety may be very different from other people's.
I agree. I mean, he tried out for a musical actually for his senior year. And it was just, it's interesting because, you know, talking to him, I mean, he's much better now, you know, or in terms of like stuttering. He used to stutter a lot more, and just even his like speech, it was mm-hmm. when he was younger, is more robotic and mm-hmm. not very fluid. But when he would join drama club or get involved in those types of theatrical productions and stuff, it was like mm-hmm. the speech was just flowing. It was just a different kid. It was amazing to watch him.
Well, I wanted to add that I did cultivate allies.
Okay.
Like, we had a middle school counselor that was kind of an ally. We made an ally out of the speech therapist who became the case carrier in high school. And so that Bruno can have a resource if there's a problem. And sometimes there would be a problem, like when he would freak out and get all wound up, and the school nurse would cover for him and say he was having an asthma attack and he had to go to the office. And, you know, we got him through a lot of stuff by making friends in different places that helped, that I knew I could count on.
Yeah. And I think that
is important. There were plenty of hiccups.
Yeah, no, I right? can, yeah, I've been through that too.
There was one time when a teacher was afraid of him because he's so loud, because he doesn't understand how to control volume. And he's kind of a biggish kid. His shoulders are big. She thought he was being loud and threatening and in her face, but really he was just being Bruno and he would never hurt a fly. But she felt threatened, and that turned into a big to-do. But afterward, she realized who he really was, and she actually cried when he left.
Aww.
I know.
So he actually likes school, right?
You know, it's hard to say if he likes school. I would love Bruno to be here to answer that question. I think he found school easy, doable. Like, the academic part of it was never really a problem.
Okay. Did it take, I mean, so it, was it more than the speech was a problem, or was it? So, I mean, I guess there was some social.
No, he just couldn't function really without an aide until we started to wean the aide in middle school. Like, all through elementary, he would sprawl all over the other kids' chairs. He would make all kinds of weird noises.
Okay.
The aide kept his behavior on track, kept him paying attention. The aide was essential through elementary. But by middle school, he was starting to get it. And what was really nice that I should mention is that his peers that he had come all the way through school with, many of them were really very kind and started prompting him themselves. Oh. They had basically learned from the aides how to prompt him.
Oh,
which okay. was actually really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
And then we finally were able to wean the aides, and he didn't need an aide in high school. Junior high was when we weaned the aides. And the last place we weaned them from were places like recess or PE or lunch. Those were the social places.
Right. So as an ASD mom, my biggest fear has been, will my son be okay when I'm no longer around? So I worried about high school and now college and him starting a career and living a life independently. So what are some of the things that you've done to help Bruno thrive?
So obviously I made a special needs test as soon as my husband died. And then, oddly enough, years later, realized I didn't need it. So I had to update my trust that it didn't have to be special needs anymore. As I said, I raised his younger sister to look out for him and accumulated additional siblings that I hoped would be supportive. And to some extent, you know, that they are. We had him almost continuously in social skills groups. I would be scouting for any social skills group, and preferably one that was run by either a therapist, like a psychotherapist, because I could build that. Mm-hmm. I had a secondary insurance that I could build. We continuously did social skills groups. Like, we went from one to another. And I didn't mention this, but we had speech services at Pediatric Therapy Network, which was the former AIRS clinic. And they did fabulous social skills groups with outings. They combined speech with OT, which they felt helped the speech stick better. We did a mm-hmm. lot at Pediatric Therapy Network, and we drove all the way to Torrance to do that from the age. But we did, and all that stuff.
Oh, okay. So as far as like coping strategies, did he like the social groups? Was he open to doing them?
The poor guy, I don't think he ever knew that there was another option in life. This is a child who was working a 40 plus hour week from when he was 3 years old. I mean,
when they said you had to have 40 hours of ABA, I was like, yep, 40 hours. And I'm going to go for 45 just in case, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he knew nothing but work and reward, social skills. This was his life. And when you're a little kid, you don't really realize that life can be different. I don't think he ever asked any questions. I think he just accepted it. And it, I think it may have kind of made him into the kind of workaholic that he is today.
Wow. I asked that question because I actually, I forget how, my son must have been in like third grade or fourth grade, but I enrolled him in this like summer camp. And it was more like a summer camp social skills group, but it was like a drama club type of thing. And he was into it in the beginning, but then, so I hadn't talked to him about autism yet, about his diagnosis, but when he went, you know, so, Ray is more, I don't like to use the word high functioning, but you know what I mean? He was able to converse and, you know, right. But then, you know, there were other kids there who had more severe presentations of their autism.
Right.
And I think that was for him. He was like, why am I here?
Why am I with these kids?
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
Well, I think that's, and I think the point there for all of us, and as an autism mom, let's face it. ASD kids need socialization, and sometimes that's all you can socialize with, and you need to be in those settings. But neurotypical kids make the best friends for our kids because they model social skills that our kids need.
Yeah, right.
It's, you have to balance. You're going to be with some ASD kids, but ultimately you need to cultivate neurotypical kids if you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as far as like coping strategies, I know you said that, you know, like in the social situations, you know, the therapist would help, or the aide would help them out, like at school. So yeah,
find a friend, sit with someone at lunch, you know, I mean, constantly prompting.
So he was stimming when he was younger. Is that right? Like he would do something.
He probably still stims to this day.
Okay.
I mean, he does some weird things. Like when he thinks you're not around, he'll talk to himself very loudly, like to the point where you can hear him somewhere else in the house. Just, he has some behaviors, but some things he's had to learn, like when he walks around, he kind of holds onto his elbows. And I think he does that because he knows that his hands and arms do weird stuff, just little things. He doesn't, the way it, you know, he's in a library talking really loud in the library and you can't get the volume down, in a bank talking really loud. You know, you can't, I mean, some of this stuff, it just, I'm still hoping it gets better, but somehow he manages.
I mean, I've spoken to Bruno briefly, and for our listeners, I'm actually going to be interviewing him like in about a week after like interviewing you just. So, I mean, the brief like conversation that I had with him, he sounded really eloquent. So that's why I'm asking you these questions about like moderate to severe and how, you know, speech language. I would not have known that he has autism just talking to him on the phone. I mean, he just, everything was appropriate conversation.
Yeah.
You know, he was, you know, very polite, very mature. I would not say, you know, he has autism. I was
so great. So you're saying he's neurotypical passing now?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes. So
we joke about that because he's now that he's got a beard, he's also white passing. He doesn't look as Asian with his beard.
But I mean, he's come a long way. Then I mean, I'm just like, kudos to you and your family for raising him.
You know what? It, Bruno, and this is in part his dad's legacy. I mean, I always wish his dad was here to see what finally transpired, because his dad like poured his heart and soul into it. And I could sit here and go on for hours about all the things his dad did for him. But, you know, here we are. This is where we are today.
Right. What age did you talk to Bruno then about autism? Was he younger or?
Yeah, the ABA wanted us him at a younger age.
Okay.
So the ABA team was after us to tell him that he had autism when my husband was alive. And honestly, I think just coping with the autism was really hard on my husband, and thinking about telling Bruno, I think was extremely hard on my husband. And it didn't happen while my husband was alive. But after he died and I got involved with this other guy, and he was very supportive to Bruno. He loved Bruno and still does love Bruno. And we talked about telling him, and finally we decided to tell him. He was like 9 years old. So we took him to McDonald's, and we sat down at McDonald's over dinner at McDonald's, and we told him he had autism. And he just listened, and he didn't react at all, didn't act surprised. And he went home, and he drew a picture on paper of a brain. And the brain had all kinds of different areas. And I still have that brain picture. And that's how I knew that he had processed what we said, because he drew a picture of his brain and all the things that were in his brain. And it had a separate area for baseball, reading, writing, saving money, history, geography, shopping. But that's the only way that I knew that he processed the information. Because we were explaining to him that he had a different brain. I was like, Bruno, you know, your brain is structurally and functionally different.
Uh-huh.
It's like if you had a car and the car could have a straight six or a V6 or a 12-cylinder Ferrari engine, but you've got the Wankel engine. Your engine is completely different, but it's still an engine. Mm-hmm. And he got it. That's kind of how I explained it to him.
That's cool. Well, I'd like to talk about transitions, like high school to college and then college to entering the workforce and living independently. How did you know that Bruno was ready for college?
Okay, so this happened kind of by accident. We got a letter in the mail from Stanford inviting him to go to a summer program. And he was all excited. And the nanny got the letter and she was all excited. And she was very optimistic and I was terrified. And they wanted him to participate in this over the summer. He was in kind of a dorm setting that was somewhat protected because they were students. And there were some hiccups. And he didn't, the social part of it, he struggled. But the academic part, I mean, he got an A in one class and a B in the other. And I was like, holy cow, my kid is 16. He went to Stanford. He took classes with students at freaking Stanford and he got an A and a B. He
wow.
can go to college.
Wait, what program was this again?
They still have this program, I think. I don't know what happened during the pandemic, but Stanford has a program where kids from all over the world are invited. And I mean, there's a cost, but it's not exorbitant.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't help you get into Stanford, by the way, but you can take classes with Stanford kids for college credit during the summer, real classes, and you live in a dorm and there's all these activities. Now, Bruno, where Bruno fell down was the activities. He didn't make it to most of the activities. He kind of told me, I never seem to like be there at the right time, or like I don't find out about it and they all leave without me, or like lots of the social stuff happened without him. He did go to they had like a cook-off. So he cooked something for the cook-off, and he did go to the aquarium with them where he somehow lost his wallet. But it worked out. And I'll never forget at the end, I went to pick him up and he had all his stuff packed up and it was like in a backpack and he had like a suitcase. And he just looked like a giant turtle at the side of the road with its home on its back. But that was when he did Stanford for 8 weeks in the summer. I knew that he could go to college. I couldn't deny it.
Wow. That's cool. And he wanted to be there, right? I mean.
Oh, absolutely. He was devastated that he didn't get into Stanford. Hmm. He tried to go early decision and he got deferred. A lot of people get rejected. So he got set admission chances up from 7% to 15%, but he still didn't get in yet. So he ended up going to Claremont McKenna, which was a wonderful school for him. Cannot say enough for how well that school worked out for him.
So did he live on campus?
He did. He was very clear in high school. He hung around the smart kids. He was in the classes with the smart kids. And actually by senior year, two of the girls that were in the smart kids clique had kind of taken a liking to Bruno, not, you know, that way, but like they liked him enough that they started including him in the smart kids activities so that he was able to go in a group on a party bus to prom, you know, not with a date or anything, but they started including him. And I'm so grateful to those two girls for doing that. Cause that was, he really started to have the experience of what's it like to have a friend group, to be in a clique of somebody.
Right.
And that finally happened for him toward the end of senior year.
Oh,
but everyone was going to college and getting ready for college. And of course, Bruno was, you know, being Bruno. So he was sitting in the college advisor's office every lunch. Can you imagine how he was torturing this woman?
So I had to hire a college advisor for him because I knew he was going to drive the high school one crazy. So I hired an advisor and she worked out great with him. She did a great job.
Okay. And how, and as far as college, did he have a roommate or did he do a single room or how was that experience?
He would have been perfectly happy with a single room, but they gave him a roommate who was a nice kid that was kind of not, they weren't interested in each other at all. They just lived in the same room together. And then the second year that happened again, another kid lived in the same room. I think that was the year he finally got a single room. And junior and senior year, actually junior year, he spent half the year in Argentina. Bruno was really good at Spanish. And it was just another thing for him to memorize. And he went to Argentina and studied at La Universidad de Buenos Aires. And he took all of his classes with people from Argentina in Spanish and got A's in that.
Wow, that's amazing. That's
including
so cool.
including the oral exams at the end. So when people tell you you can't teach a kid with autism a foreign language, that is not true. Once they learn English, anything can happen.
Wow. So in terms of choosing a college, did you visit ones that were specifically autism friendly? I guess I can't think of a better term.
Well, you know, Bruno was very particular and he had read Fisk's entire book of colleges and he could tell you any statistic about any college and had them all, you know, had memorized everything. And so he wasn't going to settle for just a college with an autism program or, I mean, he was going straight to the top. He was going to Stanford. He wanted to do economics. He had a plan. The way we got Claremont McKenna, remember the psychiatrist that told me that his wife cured autism and walked on water? Well, he told me one day, I ran into him getting breakfast somewhere. And I told him Bruno was looking at colleges and he goes, he should go to Claremont McKenna. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say that's why he ended up there, but he did end up there. Same psychiatrist. Uh-huh. So in the end, he had like a top 10 list. And honestly, only two of the schools he chose accepted him. I do think some schools were put off by his autism. I think some were put off because he didn't have any extracurriculars, because he had fabulous SATs. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know enough to get SAT prep for him. I was just completely broadsided with the SATs. Mm-hmm. I didn't know enough. If I had prepped him, he would have done better. I made a mistake. But anyway, he selected a list of colleges and only two of his 10 top choices accepted him, Claremont McKenna and Berkeley. And he liked Berkeley, but he liked Claremont McKenna better. And I was thrilled because it was smaller and it was close to it. Mm-hmm. From work, I could actually get there in like less than an hour from work if I needed to.
Okay.
And gosh darn, if one day I wasn't at a meeting and Bruno called me on the phone and said, my throat hurts and it doesn't get better drinking water. I think I have a cold. And I ran out of the meeting, went to Target, bought everything you would ever need.
I could hear you, but it was like part of it froze. But I got the part where you said that you went out and like you were an hour away. So.
Oh yeah. And I just dashed over there with everything for him. Not that he would have been fine if I wouldn't have, but I just was possessed with the need to like go show my son that I loved him. So I did it.
Well, no. So at the college, was the Disability Resource Center, were they really good about working with the students and helping them stay on track? I mean, they have their academic advisors, but the Disability Resource Center, were they helping them, you know, adjust to college life?
So this is what happened. So his freshman year, he gets invited to take an honors course in political science. And we told him, oh, do it, because it was right before the 2016 election. And we were like, it's going to be an exciting time to study political science. You should do it. I think you'll really like it. And the professor, who I will forever be indebted to, had a child with autism himself.
Mm.
And in fact, had written The Politics of Autism. And he was like the duck that my son imprinted on and followed. Yeah, that became his mentor. Ultimately, was the mentor for his senior thesis. Say enough about it, because I was waiting for my opportunity to shake that man's hand.
Wait, so what was his major?
Initially, his major was econ, but then he switched to politics econ. And he had planned, keep in mind that one of his criteria for evaluating colleges, he knew that the average student changes majors X number of times.
Right.
And so he needed to pick a college that was very friendly to that. So he changed to politics econ. Don't actually like the practice of it. And by that time, he had changed to PPE, which is politics, philosophy, and econ.
Okay.
Which is a major in and of itself that runs on a very unique model at Claremont McKenna, where you literally are one-on-one with professors. It's really quite amazing. And he ultimately, I can't say enough about that school.
Wow.
And the other thing, fabulous thing about that school, from day one, I told Bruno, do not get a job. I don't want you getting a job. What does he do day one? He gets a job. Turns out that Claremont McKenna offers real actual jobs where you get paid and you do actual work that can go on your resume. And they're interesting jobs like consulting and being part of a think tank that studies political things. And Bruno had the most interesting series of jobs, and they were all great resume items.
Wow, that sounds like a great college. I mean, and
oh my God, I cannot say, I love that college. Mm-hmm. I cannot say enough good about that college.
So, I mean, it sounds like there were a lot of supports there. Did they help him with transitioning, like after college, like internships and getting a job?
The college had a lot of opportunities for him to like network with other people in his major in other cities, go on a trip to Washington and meet famous people. And he did all these things. And of course, he went to Argentina. But again, he made a friend. There was a girl. Her name was Zippy. She was in his freshman dorm and he made friends with her. And they're still friends to this day. She just moved away from Salt Lake City. Again, he found a friend. And I told her, of course, I owe this girl everything. And I told her, you know, you're always a family member. If you're ever in town, you could stay at my house. Anything you need, you just hit me up. And he told me the other day, he said, yeah, her family said that to me too.
Aww.
Which I thought was so beautiful. She just moved away. She works for the FBI and she just moved away. She's was in Salt Lake City and she literally just moved to Portland like last week.
Wow.
And Bruno said he's not going to Portland with her, but I think they'll still be friends. And her family is still in Salt Lake City and he's going to be living nearby where her family lives.
Wow. And speaking of where he's living, there's just so many things that are so cool about Bruno. And for our listeners and like, you know, when I interview him, you'll see that he's really come a long way. And, what is going on with Bruno right now? Like, what is, like, he's got like this cool milestone that, that he's achieving.
I know it's hard to ever tell, because that's Bruno, you know, he never tells you anything. He just does it. Bruno had started looking for a house and he's buying a house and his offer was accepted and he's planning to close on his 25th birthday. And he told me he didn't insist on that. It's just the way it worked out. That it'll close on his 25th birthday, which is October 1st. So he's 25 buying a house. He's got it all planned out. Think he's okay.
Yeah.
But you know, that's Bruno. I mean, he just does all these projects. He just comes up with his own projects. You know, at work, he's not involved in human resources at all, but he researched all options that they have for healthcare and investments and all this stuff. And he found out so much about all this. He kept asking him questions, finally just interested in cryptocurrency, and they would pick his brain about it. And he became like the resident expert. And when he develops a special interest in, and I guess right now it's housing.
Okay. And so I'm sorry, you said he's like the resident expert at work for what right now?
For all the human resources stuff, like what kind of insurance should I get?
Okay.
And, what should I use, a healthcare deductible account or healthcare savings account, or what should I do with my stock options and how does this work? And he found out all the details to all of that. And everyone started asking him about it. So he just wrote a manual.
Oh my gosh. Well, I won't spoil it for everybody else. I'll, you know, everybody will be hearing from Bruno himself about his journey and like what's going on like right now. But for now, I wanted to ask you, Josette, what resources have you found helpful along your journey?
So one of the things that you asked about, and besides mentioning like the people that helped, like the Masons and all the ABA people and the college students that we recruited to be therapists and so many things, and the other moms and the support groups and everything that I participated in, I have a great autism bookshelf that I'd be happy to share with anybody. I just want to mention some of the books that I found early on that are old, but they're still classics. If you're needing inspiration and you have a new diagnosis, read Let Me Hear Your Voice by Catherine Morris, where you realize, hey, my child can get better. If you want to know how an ABA program works, and if you are on a desert island and you had to create an ABA program, get Behavioral Intervention for Young Children with Autism. Definitely read Stanley Greenspan, read The Child with Special Needs, read Engaging Autism. Read Steve Gutstein, who wrote the RDI book, Relationship Development Intervention. You think Child, which Carol Stott Kranowitz. And I also have some other books. Definitely read Temple Grandin. I have just several other books that I won't go into great detail, but my bookshelf has been extremely helpful and much loved.
Well, what words of wisdom would you like to share with us, especially for those just starting their autism journey?
So there's a couple things. First of all, this is a marathon, not a sprint. I would encourage you to take care of you, take care of your fitness, take care of your mental health, and take care of your marriage if you have one. Even if you think you can't, you don't have time, please find the time. Some of my greatest regrets are the things that I didn't take care of because I thought I couldn't. Remember that it's the same kid that it was before the diagnosis. I was comforted by Welcome to Holland by Emily Pearl Kingsley, which teaches you a little bit about a different reality than you expected. And I was also later inspired by Welcome to Beirut, which is a little more accurate in terms of what you'll have. So definitely that one too, if you're going to read Welcome to Holland. And I would say that even though you know great pain as an autism mom, you also know great joy, because the things everybody else takes for granted, like having a friend or saying I love you or things like potty training, we are so thrilled. So our joys are greater too. And that's an important thing to remember. The last two things I would leave you with: it doesn't matter how long it takes your child to get there. What matters is that they get there. So if your kid is slower than other kids in a lot of things, take heart in the fact that if they get there, eventually it's all going to be okay. Last thing is fight for your child's rights. Know your child's rights. People aren't naturally going to want to help your child, and they aren't naturally going to want to share resources with your child or give your child precious resources. Don't take no for an answer. Network, find out what your child deserves. Get a lawyer if you have to. We used one behind the scenes. It was the best couple hundred bucks we ever spent. And that's all we spent. Lots of people spent more and had to go to court. We didn't, just took the advice and ran with it. But fight for your child, because you're the only one that can. They can't fight for themselves. That's my words of wisdom.
Thanks, Josette. Well, that concludes our podcast for today. Thank you, Dr. Thompson, for sharing your story and helping to educate and empower us. We wish you and your family all the very best. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Stay well, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you for listening to the Autism Mom MD podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, spread the word, and leave a review on iTunes. For any questions, comments, or suggestions for topics you'd like to hear on the podcast, please join our Facebook group, Autism Mom MD, or visit us on the web at www.autismmommd.com.